Hello and welcome to Movie of the Year, the only podcast with the science and the screaming to determine what the best movie of any given year is. And this season, I am very excited to say we are doing 2004. Last season, we decided that the best movie of 1999 was Eyes Wide Shut. I checked before I came into the studio today, guys. It is still Eyes Wide Shut, the best movie for 1999. With me, I'm Greg, your host. With me, our grand champion, my best friend, Ryan.
I gotta say, dude, like, I appreciate the championship and everything. Yeah. I earned it, but this belt, like, to wear, it's hard to
sit
down.
Is it too much to have a different belt for every single time you win?
That's going to be crazy.
I thought you guys would be splitting the belt. Challenger Mike here.
You have to wear every belt
you win.
I thought the point, like, the reason that wrestling and boxing is cool, as opposed to, like, team sports just print out a new trophy every year.
Uh-huh.
But one-on-one sports, you have to hand the belt over.
Yeah, he beats you up and takes the belt away from you.
But I'm going to wear this belt that I won all season long, and right now the gold is digging into my chest and my balls.
And it does, you know, the old glasses for New Year's, it does say 1999 on that belt, so one of your balls is poking out one of the nines, your dick's wrapped around the other nine.
But the cool thing about the belt,
I think it's a fun look.
It's very Sharpie-able. Like, I can write 2004 on this when I win at the end of this season.
No, I already have the intern printing out a new one.
Oh, God.
Just chiseling it out.
Just printing out a new belt.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to go on a belt by episode basis.
We couldn't afford the 3D printer, but we locked down the belt printer. Like, that was no problem.
Yeah, well, I say print for any action that you do with your hands. When our interns, most are like, I can get coffee, I can do social media.
Yeah.
This one can carve things.
Okay, so
like a Michelangelo.
Handyman.
You'll say, print me some coffee?
He's a six-year-old intern, like it's some sort of late Robert De Niro movie.
He's our prodigy.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's our protege.
Apprentice. If you use the word apprentice, it gets you out of child labor laws.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, we're just teaching him how to carve things by making him carve things.
Right.
And you have to throw in some light haberdashery, otherwise the government.
Oh, yeah. You got to do some light haberdashery. The government looks away. They get so bored and look away.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's the kind of crew we are, though. Mm-hmm. We're haberdashers for sure.
I was a haberdasher when I was 11.
Uh-huh. In what context, though? This sounds confusing.
In Taming of the Shrew.
Oh! You know, I remember you mentioning that, but maybe not all our listeners
will. No, that was a little tease for the freeloaders.
Yeah.
Oh. The Ten Things Show was based on our Taming of the Shrew show.
Yeah,
we reviewed Taming of the Shrew.
And not to be a dick, but I listened to that show because I edited it, and it was a really good show. So like,
we do be a dick. We should tease and let them know how fucking good it is.
I know, but I don't want to be like an asshole about it and be like, you guys missed one of the best episodes. But that really was a very strong episode.
Can we, this early in the 04 season, tease what Patreon 04 is going to be? Or do we need to sit on it?
We can. Well, let's talk about it right now. On show meeting.
Okay. Everybody's favorite.
Listeners, this isn't for you. Don't listen.
So right now, we're going to go with a movie that did not make the bracket, but needs to be watched and watched by us.
Yeah.
And it's a little movie called Garden State.
Oh, it's going to change your life.
But I was thinking that we flip the script entirely from the season, and instead of picking the 16 movies that the world chose to be in the bracket, what if we really do some research and find the single worst?
The worst of all the movies.
Moody is set up in such a way where we never get to talk about the worst movies ever, guys.
You want a special Razzie episode?
A little bit, yeah.
Let me call timeout on you. You mentioned the bracket. Ryan, where can they find the bracket?
The bracket is, of course, challenge.com. And that was not, I did not misspeak there.
Yeah.
It's spelled stupidly.
Also, we didn't name the fucking website.
Yeah,
we're just
off
utilizing
our asses,
it.
Guys.
No more letters about
what,
this.
Do you hate
you guys?
The French?
challenge.com/Moody2004. And Moody is M-O-T-Y.
M-O-T-Y. Yeah. Movie of the year. The only podcast with the... No, I did that.
I wanted the loop.
And you can get the up-to-the-moment bracket.
Right.
Right there. Okay. So, but that's just an aside from... You want to watch the... We are going to try to find the consensus worst movie. That's not Garden State?
Hold on one sec. Let me just describe the show to you, Mike, and then you unleash the movie right in our faces. We have this like 100, 200 like person room that gives Greg all of these questions that Mike and I don't know about right now.
Ever.
They write all these questions and they're so good. And
they're
so like succinct and to the point.
We have the best, most quiet live studio audience.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They're
and
very polite.
They're nodding so enthusiastically.
Answer those questions about Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, inarguably a classic of our lifetimes. What if we had to answer those same style questions written by those same style people about the worst movie of the year.
So we can't phone it in. We can't just make jokes about it.
No, no, we
don't
do,
do that. Yeah.
And, yeah. Under, we can't. Like, honestly, if we sat down and tried to do it, we couldn't because we are professionals and we bring our A game.
We're just constantly talking about character development and theme.
There's no preseason for us. There's no off-season for us. There's no regular season for us. There's no postseason for us.
We didn't choose
all
this
life. All
we
do is podcast, so we have to do a good job every time we do it.
Our wives didn't choose this life either.
Now, Mike, I'm a little nervous
mm-hmm.
when I ask you what your idea of the worst movie of 2004 is. And I swear to God, if you say The Mummy, I'm going to fucking freak out.
That's one of the best movies in 1999, so I wouldn't say it. Sharon Stone. Patience Phillips. Corporate. Espionage.
Is this a catted woman?
It's a catted woman.
Oh, shit. I'm down.
This is no doubt the worst movie of this year. Like, yeah, okay. So
you
that
said
will be...
04 worst movie. That came screaming into my brain.
Yes, okay. So we will... That is going to be the Patreon episode for this season. We will watch 2004's
and
Cat,
if,
Cat
have
woman.
You guys seen it?
I have
in
not
theaters.
Seen it.
You saw it in theaters?
Oh, hell yeah.
Up on the
remember,
big screen.
In 04, all we had to go on was... an X-Men movie, two Blade movies, and a Spider-Man.
At that point, 2004, you were like, boop, 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 yo, movie phone. What has superheroes?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
he was like,
hello,
I guess Catwoman right now.
To movie
I was
phone.
Still talking about how League of Extraordinary Gentlemen wasn't that bad in 04. Because I was trying to trick myself. That
do you remember the
me.
Only Avengers movie we had in 04?
Uh-huh. Uma Thurman?
Uma Thurman.
Okay, well, I'm going to declare it. I'm sort of in charge. Oh, and so I'm going to say that's what we're doing. We're going to watch 2004's Catwoman as the Patreon. And you guys, we're gonna nail it. Like, we're going to get into the themes. We're going to get into the imagery. We're going to get into how, like, Halle Berry's performance is so awkward that it's, like, actually embarrassing to watch this movie.
With a lot of superhero movies, it's all about, like, CGI and special effects. But that is a director's film. That is a auteur's piece, and we're going to get into it. I have seen a scene from that movie dozens of times.
Because it's, like, Gift or something?
Where Billy Bob Thornton comes in, and Halle Berry's there,
oh,
and
yeah.
they just go to town
it
on the
totally
couch.
It totally changed a lot from the rest of that movie,
yeah.
but it was the best scene in that movie.
Is that the director's cut, or is that just in the Catwoman
on
natural?
That's in the sequel, Catwoman, colon, Monsters Ball.
That's her origin story. Catwoman, here's how she
went just
nuts.
Wants to feel good. Just make her feel good. Well, unfortunately, we're not going to be talking about Catwoman anymore tonight, I think.
No, you have to pay to hear us talk about Catwoman.
Yeah. Did we just dissuade people from paying? No, do it, you guys.
Can I tell you real quick before we move on?
Okay.
I really like Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Oh, yeah.
Do you oh.
We were just about to change gears and talk about that. We are going to be talking about tonight, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Were you guys ready to, when you sat down to it, I don't know how long it's been since you watched it. Were you guys ready, arms folded, ready to shit on it?
No. I was ready for this to be the best movie of 2004 right off the bat.
We're sometimes hipsters, but this is a hipster movie.
Right. I watched it with nails in my mouth, ready to cartoonishly chew them like a typewriter because how much I loved this movie when it came out.
You know who else has really long nails?
Who?
Catwoman.
Catwoman.
That's true. Okay, so that's the one last time that we'll talk about Catwoman tonight.
Yeah, this movie came out, I was a junior in high school, or in between junior and senior year, and
I thought you were going to say I was a
junior Western bacon cheese.
I was so...
Junior Western bacon
cheese. I
thought
I was so smart and cool because I got and dug this movie.
Oh, yeah.
But so I was terrified to watch it.
That's the thing, too, is that I don't think I'd seen it for a long time. I think it's one of those things where I watched it 10 times in a year, and then nothing, and I was so nervous about young me and my feelings on movies, and I can't believe... how it not only hit all my buttons, but I think the same buttons. Like, I wasn't able to talk about it when I first saw it, but, man, it really gets you in those places.
And I would say this time I thought it was better than the first time I saw it. And that's how I felt about Being John Malkovich. Like, I had more capacity to appreciate it.
And there's levels that I think younger people just don't get.
Yeah.
Because you haven't experienced these kinds of relationships yet or that much life yet and you don't know what they're attacking.
I had been with my wife for a couple of years and we were both young. We were both like, you know, from the time we were 18 to like 21 together.
And she had a hardcore Clementine habit. Like she just kept eating those tiny oranges.
Yeah.
The cuties.
Yeah.
The cuties, man. Yeah, I would go in and she just like have bags of Halos and cuties just all over the place and be like, you got a problem, man. She's like, they're seedless.
I guess I could still doubt my younger self. Insane. I didn't know why it was good. Mm-hmm. I just said it was good, you know, because
no, you were confused.
You felt because it spoke to some deep part of you that now you can access and put words to, but you felt what it was doing.
But there's a thing, I don't know if it's High Fidelity or Almost Famous, some music movie where you listen to Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys.
Uh-huh.
You're like, oh, that's catchy. and then you go through hell as far as love life, and then oh no, this is
that's high fidelity.
This is perfect music. Yeah. This is the perfect album. And so I had not gone through that shit when I first watched Eternal right. Sunshine. Now every part of this kicked me in the heart.
I think when it came out, we all ached because that possibility could be out there. If only I could be so tortured by love. And now we all ache when we watch it because, oh my God, this is this person in my life.
Yeah.
We've all tried to stop being Joels and had a hard time with that. And we've all like met Clementines that we wish looked at us. You know, we've had so much, it's been so many breakups and...
I'm just glad I'm not Patrick anymore.
Right. That is a good move on your part.
Baby boy.
Well, we have so much to say about this movie, obviously, but let's turn our attention to 2004, and let's talk about some of the best TV of 2004 when we come back.
Mount Rushmore!
Gentlemen, Webster's Dictionary defines Rushmore as a crazy, spooky mountain where a bunch of presidents' heads popped out of one day. I like to think that's as true today as the day it was written.
Yeah, the Constitution is a, what is it, an evolving document?
It's a living document, unless you're Scalia, in which case you think that we should just go by whatever a bunch of fucking slave-owning misogynistic assholes thought. But
also, my rule as far as saying things is don't ever say anything that won't be as true as it is that day forever.
Yeah.
Like, if it might be a lie in the future, just don't say it.
Is it that hard? Is it that hard to only say things that will always be true?
Do you guys think I'm going to Bartlett out one day? Do you guys think I'm going to ever hit the top of the Bartlett charts?
Yeah, I think probably you'll have like one really killer quotation.
Just one's all I need, baby.
Yeah, you know what like, I've started doing is I've started saying just because we're caught in a bubble doesn't mean we can't cause any trouble.
Oh,
I want that associated
really
with
good.
Me. Really, that's Pauly Shore from Biodome, but I'm hoping that
if you
it will become
enough,
associated with me and then when it look, inevitably gets into Bartlett's.
How many quotes are you allowed in Bartlett's? Because I was flipping through the other day. Pauly Shore already has, it's the Leaning Tower of Cheese.
Yeah, well, he's also
can
got,
get in there again?
Don't wheeze the juice, buddy.
It goes, as far as like Bartlett stats, it goes Mark Twain, Abraham Lincoln, Pauly Shore.
Yeah.
So like, he's up there.
Yeah.
If we're at a party, Greg, and you hear me across the room say to a group of people that you don't know that quote, are you going to freak out or are you just going to let it go?
I'm just going to let it go.
Are you sure?
I'm a gentleman. So
yeah,
I'm
you deal with that
go.
Shit in the studio on a mic. Not
in front of
not,
an audience.
Not ghostly in the party.
Well, guys, the Rushmore that we're going to construct is going to be TV from 2004. TV was pretty big in 2004, you guys. I remember because I was there.
It was all but the rage.
This is still before we were saying TV's better than movies, guys.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. this is pre-peak TV. Yeah, pre-peak. But at this time, there would still be like five good shows, and you'd be like, you'd talk about the programs that you were going to watch.
And yeah, we were at that point saying like five good shows. Back in my day, there were zero good shows.
This was, I think, in the era, and I don't know if 2004 or if it was 2002, but this was the era of people freaking out. And because the internet was just starting to get easier to use and people freaking out in forum and message boarding and getting real fandom on TV.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is still like a time when like 24 would be on TV and people would be like, this is appointment viewing. It's like, not true, you guys.
We had The Sopranos and Oz and Buffy and 24. Like that was sort of like
HBO dared to ask the question, what if this was good?
Mm-hmm.
What if you could spend the evening watching a good television program?
We spit on them for a year and went, wait.
So, guys.
And the way that they did that was like, what if we said it wasn't TV? Like, what if we just shit on the whole
it's
genre?
It's not TV, you idiot. It's the home box office.
That's how shitty TV was, is HBO made good TV and went, but we have to trick them. It's not TV.
Well, Mike, when you think 2004 TV, what springs to mind? What do you think goes on that mountain?
I think that there's two shows that ruled every conversation in the lunch line and the internet forums. And the biggest one is, I think, would ruin movies and TV and nerds for years, but got in people's heads and we didn't yet know how much it would let us down or that Damon Lindelof would go back to this style over and over again. And J.J. Abrams, it birthed all these fucks. It is Lost. We all got lost in 2004.
Lost is 2004?
I think it's second season.
Do you know
season
what season
was
it was? Second season? So that was still when we were all about it.
Oh, my God.
So that meant in the summer, so second season aired, and then it went that summer it could start airing all of them all the night, so that hooked people in, because nobody really watched in the first season.
Yeah.
It was something you heard about in the first season.
And I think that the original Netflix was Blockbuster carrying those DVDs, and then that's how we binged. Do you guys remember the season enders? Like, what was the end of season two? When did Jack say, we got to go back?
Oh, that's end of, like, season four.
Oh, really?
Yeah, season two, I think, ends with, like, the hatch. I think they, like, find the hatch, and you're like, dude, what the shit's down that hatch? And I'm sure I'm going to find out right away. And you don't really. And then when you do, it's boring.
I have watched the first two seasons of Lost 3 times each because years go by and I go, I should start from the beginning.
Oh,
and
God.
Now I'm admitting to myself, I will never watch it, and that's okay.
It's not worth it, dude. You can't. It's too much time. I mean, it was fun while it lasted, and it was like fun in the zeitgeist. But part of the fun was being like, this show fucking sucks now. I couldn't imagine plowing through all 7 seasons.
I can, and I'm going to.
I'm proud of you, but I would not do it myself.
Spin-off podcast of OCD?
Greg, I like sports so much more.
You call
than
it Lost in the OC.
Oh, what a title. I like sports so much more than Mike that like jizz is dripping from my balls about what a man I am. But I could not tell you a single Super Bowl quarterback ever. I remember exactly that feeling when that hatch was revealed.
And then
Holy shit.
Go like down, the shot goes like down the hatch and you can see up and you're just like, your mind is just pregnant with so many hatch possibilities. Just hatch babies just crawling all over.
Do you think that
babies.
I'm a crazy drug addict now trying to get that hatch feeling back?
Oh, we all are chasing the dragon on that first couple seasons
of
Lost.
Any little mystery. Boone died. Nobody even liked him, but we're like, but a main character can die?
On
and
a
those
TV
baby
show?
Blue eyes?
And well, Boone was the guy who went on to Hunger Games fame? Was that him?
No, Boone was in one of those vampire shows because he actually is a vampire and looks exactly the same today.
Boone had that farm that made the really
the best wine on
great
the planet.
And he had that sister who I think they banged it out.
Yeah, it was heavily implied. That was back when that was still taboo instead of just like a
Please,
subplot
you
of
have
everything.
To have that.
Do you guys ever notice that wine is always flavored off gross shit instead of like good stuff like blueberry pumpkin? Boone's farm. It's wonderful. Mike, I need a head though. What head are we putting?
Who to do?
Are you saying Lindelof?
Is it? No, it's. Can we do a three head?
You can do a triptych.
A triptych of Jack, Kate, Sawyer's
heads
smashed
it.
Together.
That's the head. A cerebus.
So the cutest nose and center eyes you've ever seen, then two dudes.
If we're focusing on the hatch, though, what was the guy in the hatch?
Desmond.
Isn't that the guy who...
But he's a minor character.
The three of them and their will they, won't they, will
and
they all at the same time.
It's the closest thing we've seen to the legit comic book version of Wolverine and Cyclops fighting for Jean Grey.
Yeah.
All right, I will only sign off on this if the Mountain puts Evangeline Lilly in the middle and then, what are their names, Jack and Sawyer kissing each of a cheek.
Yes.
They're both kissing
cheek. Oh, it's adorbs. I love it.
Okay,
let's
so
do it.
So it's mostly her face.
That's up there. That's right up there.
Right up the mountain?
Yeah.
Does
so
that?
Mike, that's a sweet point. Mike, you guys, if you're listening at home, which I hope you are, or on the road, Mike has taken the first point of this
commanding
season.
Commanding
lead. Of this season. The first point scored.
Oh, four is
mine. I don't mean to get all mathy, but like he has infinitely more points than I do.
Yeah, it's almost insurmountable. It's hard to imagine. Now, Ryan, can you possibly bridge the gap?
I think about 0-4.
Yeah, you sure do.
And I really think that there's only one TV show that ruled the airwaves.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an obvious face there. He's British. He's a dickhead. He drinks out of a Coke bottle or a Coke cup, even though we know that's probably like heroin and poop.
Mm-hmm.
But 04 was really owned by one William Hung. That is the guy who took over the entire season of American Idol.
We went on a journey.
Yeah, I had just figured out who you were talking about, and then you said William Hung. Now, he is the guy he was a very bad singer.
And he would teach us that
she bangs.
And he sang,
like, Living La Vida Loca.
She bangs.
Yeah.
This is the moment when American Idol wrapped around America's face like some sort of alien baby and impregnated, and then we all became trolls.
Uh-huh.
It's because we lifted William Hung up as a larf.
Do you think he's still enjoying that same level of popularity?
Now, yes. I think there's a middle. No, I think he's like, yeah, I had a cool life.
He's had waves.
But there was a middle ground where like, fuck, this sucks. I do not like this. I really thought that I was a good singer. But the fact that he made it to my real like litmus test here is Arrested Development, which was not
William and the Hung Jury.
Yes. Did not do the like, everybody's doing Matrix Bullet Time. We'll do Matrix Bullet Time. But the fact that he made it there. It was like old school Simpsons, where you could elevate something to iconic status if you put it in your show.
My sister's friend met him in real life, and years later, he is an arrogant prick who, even though he is famous for being untalented, is still a dickhead.
Oh, wow.
Celebrity.
Well, that
they
makes
suck.
Me all the more sad that were putting his face right up on
the
mountain.
Oh, shit.
This is the same thing. I think this is 2 or 3 years into American Idol, so it was fucking fever pitch. People are still in.
Yeah. You would like go over to someone's house, and they would be watching American Idol.
American Idol is number 2 and number 3 for the year.
Think about that.
Because they were on 4 or 5 nights a week.
And 2 of those nights were in the top 5.
I just, it's hard because eventually we're going to do 03 season and the 05 season, and maybe Simon Cowell can get on one of those. But William Hung is so 04.
He dominated 04. He had the best 04.
Yeah, 04.
All right. Mike,
mm-hmm.
you have been caught.
I've been caught.
It's a tie.
Shit.
No, not about the other things. it's just a tie. It's just a tie score.
And I should probably let you know, Mike, that whatever you say now, I'm going to vote so hardcore against it.
Right.
Yeah, but I'm the decider, though. I'm George W. Bush, big 04 figure. I'm the decider.
Mission accomplished.
Yeah, mission accomplished. All right. God, remember the simple days with George W. Bush, you guys, when all we had to worry about with the president was him conducting an illegal war to enrich his cronies?
But just letting like normal people run the government?
Yeah.
How much was that banner behind you, by the way, Greg? That says mission accomplished.
That says mission accomplished.
Straight out of the pop filter kitty.
It's $10,000.
$10,000. $10,000.
You had it signed by GW, so that was an extra $5,000.
Mike, hit us with another 04 TV.
I think Ryan was hinting at this. Is this every so many of procedural shows would be like, we can have a dickhead who I guess gets by because he's right most of the time, but people will fall in love with him, not realizing you shouldn't love the dickhead.
Uh-huh.
When there's zero redeeming qualities about them other than smarts.
Uh-huh.
This is a real facts don't care about your feelings kind of guy. But yeah, it's William H. House.
House.
Yeah, it's for sure.
The house always wins.
Looking at all those one and done shows that were in 04, all of the initial shows, if any of those actors walked, if they were like, I want 50 cents more a week than I'm being paid right now, get the fuck out of here. We don't care. We don't need you. But there was one and done show who really relied on their lead character.
And I do think because Monk came out around this time, so you could have either, every procedural show could have been either affected the Monk way or the House way, and House won.
The house always wins.
In the last 15 years, everybody just went housing it up left and right.
Well, I remember this time pretty clearly, and everybody was jazzed about House. I didn't watch the show. I felt like bad.
Uh-huh.
You know how you... But then you're like, but it's a TV show, so I shouldn't feel bad about not watching a TV show. But he was a giant.
The other thing, too, is that this was its first season. And with most shows on networks, that doesn't matter. But with Fox, it was a Fox show. Mm-hmm. It's the only season that matters.
You have
because
to kill it.
It had huge ratings, and then they just punished the show. Too many commercials, too many episodes, and then it went away like every great Fox show. But this first season, Hugh Laurie was a household name. I hate putting the first three on the mountain.
Yeah,
you know, it's rough.
But I think it's exciting.
But we're gonna have to slide him right up.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, he's just on right
now. Is he gonna go up there with the crutches because his legs don't work, or didn't his legs eventually work again in the show?
We're first season housers. He is a clear cane.
Yeah. Okay. Very good, Ryan. Can you slam dunk this thing right here? That'd be awkward. I feel like.
I don't know. Do you want it? Do you have more? Do you want to do a speed round?
I got more.
Okay.
Let's get a collection of guys and then throw one of them up there. Or girls.
The other first season hit of 04, I think, had one standout star, even though it was an ensemble, seemingly. And I bet this pissed everyone on the show off. But Eva Longoria became a household name.
Wisteria Lane, motherfucker! Yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say.
She lived on Wisteria Lane. And all the other three actresses were like had a way better resume.
Yes. You know,
like Terry Hatcher had been on TV. One half of Filliam H. Muffman was on this show, and then the fourth, but Eva Longoria became a breakout star.
I feel like you weren't supposed to slam the door on this, and then you kind of slammed the door on this. So
I think this is obvious, and this is another show that's changing. I just saw a commercial for a new show coming out this fall where Ron Livingston, who is fully in the cast, dies in the first episode and then is one of the narrators. So Desperate Housewives
started a trope.
Also has shockwaves throughout everywhere.
Wow.
You mean Shock Wives?
Shock Wives.
Well, okay, let's pretend like we're not going to put her on the mat. Is there any that you demand be included in this segment before we close it out?
I think we should talk about reality TV not just American Idol. This is also Laguna Beach, the real Orange County, was fevering it up left and right. Steven, LC, and the rest.
All right, well, that's not gonna take Eva Longoria off. Ryan, anyone, you're going to get one more person before we call this completed.
And I got another slam dunk. But that's what happens when we do this 14 years later,
mm-hmm.
is that they seem like they will be stars forever.
Yeah.
And unless you can get a job in the White House, like, you are forgotten.
They were
quickly
iconic at the time.
Yeah, like, even 5 years later, we knew who Lauren Conrad was,
uh-huh.
but now it's hard. My only other one, and I did this in 99, and I'm going to try this again. This was the final season of Ray Romano's show, and we just never talk about him, yeah. And he's one of the most talented people on earth, and at this point, the show was like the Seinfeld of its era. Everyone was watching it, and every weekend, week in, week out, he was like, the whole nation was loving it.
Oh, I don't know about this. All right. Apologies to you.
God damn it.
And apologies to Ray Romano, but that doesn't beat Eva Longoria. No. That doesn't beat the train that was Desperate Housewives,
and it's
right?
So not 04 connected, and that's an issue with shows that are great for a long time, is they're not tethered to a single year.
Yeah. That same American Idol thing. Like, if William Hung wasn't from this year, we wouldn't bring up
harder.
American Idol. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to call it. I'm going to say it's Eva Longoria takes the fourth spot. So, Mike, what is our mountain?
Your 2004 Mount Rushmore of television is Lost, represented by Jack and Sora kissing Kate on the cheeks, William Hung repping American Idol, Dr. House representing Dr. House, and Eva Longoria pissing off every other Desperate Housewife.
Real quick.
Yes.
I'd have to add that we just did 10 Things, which is a remake of Taming of the Shrew, a play that both me and Mike were in. And in between Shakespeare and Julia Stiles, there was an Elizabeth Taylor movie called Kiss Me, Kate, based on Taming of the Shrew.
Whoa!
Guys, come on.
That's very true.
Look at that.
That's very true. Well, with that, we're signing off from our Rushmore, and we'll be right back.
Everybody's gonna learn sometime.
Gentlemen, this year we're doing something a little bit different. We're going to have our computer friend actually print out some questions for us that have been taken by the live studio audience, and they're going to print out right here, and I'm getting the first one right now. This is very exciting. All right, last season, we talked about 1999's being John Malkovich. That was the runner-up for 99, if you remember. And then the first movie we're talking about in 2004 is Charlie Kaufman's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So let me ask you, does this give us an even deeper journey into the brain of Charlie Kaufman, or does watching these movies essentially back-to-back show too much of his shtick?
I do think it's unfair to watch two movies that came out 5 years apart essentially back-to-back. Like, that does give you a lot of thoughts that are unfair to both movies.
Uh-huh.
But I think that I like being John Malkovich a little bit less.
Because of what the moves you see in this.
Less than you did 5 weeks ago when we watched it.
Yeah, and that sucks. I'm going to erase that sentence. What I'm going to say is I think that having watched Eternal and then having spent like a week thinking about it, I think that it blows away being John Malkovich because of being John Malkovich's like cynicism and holding everything close to the chest and Eternal Sunshine not doing that. It feels like it was a lesser screenwriter back then.
Well, yeah, and I mean, hopefully, that's the good direction. You should always be evolving and improving as you go on and not being a hack and getting worse. You don't want them to make a Pennywise album that sounds exactly like the last Pennywise album. You want them to grow and be different.
And the Pennywise albums are those songs that the clown listens to when he does
that
dance.
Yeah,
when he does that fun little dance.
But it makes so much... I think we're learning a lot about Kaufman, and being JM was his first movie ever.
No. The one right before.
What was the one right before?
It was called Human Nature, and it was hated.
Okay. So, but like...
This is his first real movie.
His first real movie, and it makes sense that... Because there was nothing in between these two, was there?
Adaptation was between these two.
Okay, but so he's just learning and learning and learning, carving out different things. I think the vulnerability increase makes so much sense for who he was in 99 and who he is here.
If I just watched being John Malkovich, though, like that was all I had seen, I would predict that his heart would never make it to his sleep. Like, I will watch versions of BJM forever. Like, I liked it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's funny and it's clever. But I would never think that that writer would eventually get his heart to his sleeve.
Because that movie is so dark and cynical and its outlook on human nature is so terrible. And you feel like in this movie, there's a better outlook on human nature.
Absolutely. Or at least a more interesting one. And I think that the problem with being John Malkovich, looking back on it, is that it's gimmick first.
Mm-hmm.
And then the three of us dug in to find this rich, rich threesome between Cameron and Catherine and John. Whereas this one... It's just a rich relationship, and the gimmick is pushed way far to the back. Mm. And that's just gonna make a better movie.
Yeah, in a movie that definitely has a gimmick, which is that most of it takes place in his memories, the gimmick really is in the background. It's not something that you spend a ton of time thinking about. It is the only time you think about it is when it's delighting you.
Right.
When, you know, you see cool tricks like the books, the covers of the books slowly disappearing in the background because the memory is being erased, or something that freaks me the fuck out. People's faces being
warp. That's not cool, bro.
Did this movie spook you guys at all? This movie it sometimes borders on horror movie.
I've watched this a handful of times in my adult life, and if you change some of the music, it is a horror movie. I never got horror from it, but this is a terrifying movie emotionally and visually in ways I never expected.
People's faces routinely just disappear and then are replaced by weird fleshiness sometimes, or sometimes like a digitized quality. Or there's the part where he runs up to Patrick and he tries to turn Elijah Wood around, and Elijah Wood just keeps it just keeps being the back of his head. Stuff like that, like, they could have barely done, like you said, a little bit of the spooky music, and I would have been legitimately like under my blanket hiding.
But everything you just mentioned, just like on a surface level, is weird to watch. Like, that freaks me out. And then is also, like, putting all the relationship stuff aside, some of the closest to dreams that I've ever seen on film. Usually it's like a midget walks in and talks backwards, and like, that's it. Or like a tree grows and dies. Yeah. This is all attacking Twin Peaks, by the way. But that's the kind of shit that inexplicable, crazy to watch, not clearly CGI stuff that fucks with your brain.
Yeah, the blending of, this is Jurassic Park level blending practical effects and CGI, that it all works.
They found dreams on trees and then took the sap out of them and the blood, and then made this movie.
Were they murder trees?
They were murder trees.
Oh,
don't taste that murder tree.
You gotta watch out for those murder trees. But there is CGI in this movie, I guess, but a lot of it is practical effects. I mean, a forced perspective, like when he's the 4-year-old version of himself, which has to be...
That's just a big-ass table.
That's probably the most iconic part of the movie, maybe, is him as his 4-year-old self.
Well, that's scariest we get, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say the most iconic outside of a frozen lake.
Yeah, you think that because it's on the cover, and repeated like 3 different times.
We go back there 3 times, but
potato form.
Everyone remembers that, but the fact that they didn't shrink Jim Carrey with CGI or stretch a table out with CGI, and we can all see when we're watching it that that's just a big ass table.
Yeah.
But it does not take your brain away. Like, practical effects, this was at the time where like we were just transitioning into everything will be CGI forever.
All day, never stop.
And I think that either on purpose or on accident, this movie gets so much more play because of ignoring that stuff.
And the very dream-like quality, and you can tell they just built the sets this way. They just built numerous rooms. Like, here's how the house normally looks, but here's the dream house, and a bathroom leads into a different hallway. That's just a real-ass Hollywood set, but they fucked with it.
Mm.
And nothing is dreamier than I'm in the... This is my house, but it's not my house.
And that shit that you just said is what made me realize, despite seeing this movie multiple times, what made me realize that as like original and fresh as this movie is, it is also keeping all of the rom-com tropes in mind and either ignoring them on purpose or playing with them on purpose. Because what we expect from this movie, even if we're halfway through, we still expect certain things to happen because of rom-coms.
Mm-hmm.
And it just will not give it to us.
It even gives us rom-com, the fun side characters in David Cross and his girlfriend.
He's building a birdhouse,
he's
Mike.
While that cigarette just dangles out of his mouth, that's the coolest fucking thing in the world. But the way they would be the Carrie Fisher in From Harry Met Sally kind of character, but they're real-ass shitty people, so you also watch them go through shit.
In the middle of a broken relationship
that
I can't remember her name, Jane something, and David Cross starts to bring up their broken relationship. She's like, oh, not now. The movie's about a different thing, but they're also already cracked.
And they start throwing laundry at each other, which is both funny because it's not hurtful, but also like, that's not a healthy relationship.
Now, I'm going to have to go there. I'm going to have to be Debbie Downer. But we gave 99 a lot of crap for its representation. And we now have a movie that's made by the same person between the 2 years.
Written by.
Yeah. And so maybe he's not at fault for this, but it does. He is the bridge that bridges these two things. And it's worse. Its inclusion score is worse than that of Being John Malkovich. There is literally one person of color in this entire movie. It's not a character.
Yeah,
I
don't even remember who you're talking
about. It's just someone in the background of like one of the shots. This is a reimagined New York as a completely white place.
Yeah, it's the fantasy movie where you can erase memories and there's no black people in New York.
Yeah. And so, like, literally no person of color ever says anything in this movie or, like, even gets that close to the camera. And no two women, they doesn't pass the best Bechdel test. No two women ever talk about anything other than just the boys that they like. Is that, I mean, I was hoping that when we went 5 years into the future, we would see the seeds of this thing getting better.
I will say this. I have no excuse for the POC thing, and any excuse that I would have would make me sound terrible. The Bechdel test, I buy less because boys aren't talking about things either.
Right, in a this rom-com, movie, it's hard.
Everybody's talking
about it. It's so relationship-focused. Yeah. And so cis relationship-focused, that like that doesn't surprise me at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
Yeah, the genre trope of that, it would be... Nobody, even when they're doing sci-fi stuff, it's only in relation to people they want to bone.
I mean, even, how do you say his name? Patrick? But just
Patrick.
And Mark Ruffalo.
Baby boy.
They get through like two sentences with each other before they're talking about their relationships. Right. Like, it's
they
all.
They go, beep, 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 brains, my girlfriend.
It's all on the surface a horror story about relationships. Mm-hmm. And then it depends on how much you want to dig before you appreciate relationships.
I bet, and it could take us years to get there, but. My guess is 2013 is the first time we don't have this complaint
yeah.
of representation in any way. That's
and again,
the earliest
I think
I can imagine.
I think I brought this up in 99, but if we got to choose our 16 movies, we would find plenty of POCs.
Right.
But in 2004, just like 99, the movies that everyone talked about, like the biggest, most iconic movies, they're just white de facto. Like,
I guess I'm kind of projecting ahead a little bit here, but I think this movie's going to perform well in the bracket, right? And I'm just worried that...
It is the number one seed. Did we mention that?
Yeah, it's the number one seed movie. We are gushing over it. You can feel the energy in the room. And I just wonder, like, are we going to keep just always saying this movie wins even though it loses on representation? Because Eyes Wide Shut, that won last year, that's a mark against that as well, right? And this is actually a step back from being John Malkovich.
Also, does Eternal Sunshine automatically win this bracket because Eyes Wide Shut won... And then Eternal Sunshine also starts with an E. And we're just going to get a reputation of, like, E fans.
We don't want to be those guys.
Yeah, we love like, E.
We love E, yeah. Well,
that is true.
Our favorite character in Entourage.
Yeah. Turtle, for sure.
No, it's E.
Greg, could you touch me a bunch real quick? I'm freaking out.
Let's all touch each other. Well, when we come back, we are going to do the August Pop Filter Hall of Fame. Gentlemen, we stand... The august halls of the Pop Filter Hall of Fame.
Now, this is the second time you said that word. It's not because it's August?
No, it has nothing to do with it actually being August.
What is this word?
I thought I was saying the month wrong my entire life.
I think what it means is it's just like an awesome, cool place where rad dudes hang out and maybe do ollies. The listeners don't know if we can do that or not. So, yeah, do ollies.
We can absolutely do ollies. Yeah, oh, I just did one.
Ollies. Man, what a great ollie.
I know, dude.
I just did a double Ollie, anyway.
360 Ollie Narbar.
There are a lot of Hall of Fames. This is our Hall of Fame, and it's made up of the people and the things that we really care about. Mm-hmm. So if you don't agree with these people at home, make your own Hall of Fame. This one's for us.
Let me give you an example. You guys know what a Venn diagram is?
Yes. Okay. Circles. That's my favorite type of diagram.
That would be in my diagram Hall of Fame.
Yeah, for sure.
So if like you put three circles and then Dr. Jimothy Venn, who created that, is in the Hall of Fame. That's the kind of person who makes it.
Because we get so jazzed about Venn diagrams that we had to put him in right away. Well, guys, I can hardly wait to know who you have selected. Mike, I'm going to throw to you first. Who do you think ought to be in the Pop Filter Hall of Fame?
It's going
to
be me. This is the time. It's
going to be me.
This gentleman influenced all of us from an early age and stamped his style, his humor, and influenced not just us, just how comedy would work for decades to come.
I know who it is.
It's one Matt Groening.
Oh, wow.
That is so crazy because the first name on my list is also that. Yeah, probably, again, in the national conversation because Disenchanted just came out. Mm-hmm. So we're thinking about him again. Hard to argue with The Simpsons. And it's always nice to have someone that like sort of represents a big thing comprised of a lot of entities that make us happy. Right. And he would be a good figurehead for The Simpsons. I like that quite
a bit. And Futurama.
A little show called Futurama. Don't forget the little show that could. And then also, current cultural darling or huge disappointment, depending on who you ask, Disenchanted.
Which one of those are you, Greg?
I am into it, but I have heard from people who have watched more episodes than I have that it their bloom comes off the rose after a while. But I've liked it. Eric Andre is a cool demon. I'm a big fan of Abby Jacobson. There's one probably or two jokes per episode that make me laugh out loud.
That's what I'm thinking. 1 to 2.
That's per and you season? Know what? That's not bad.
And you're not going to get the Simpsons rate of return of like 30 laugh out loud moments in an episode in most shows nowadays. So.
I've got about 6 minutes worth of Disenchantment shit to tell you. Do you want me to do that now or are we waiting for later?
Do you
let's go to the break room while we're microwaving.
Hit the tops of the trees.
Tops of the trees. I agree. Like 1 to 2. It's closer to bad Futurama than it is bad Simpsons, yeah. Which I think is very good for it. And then also, I can't believe how cheap the animation looks. Like, it seems the same. If you pause it, it looks the same as those shows. But then they like fired half the animators, so it all just looks weird.
Yeah.
It's so broke.
Yeah, it probably has almost no budget at all. Well, that's been your Disenchantment Minute. Ryan, that's not what we're doing, though.
I apologize.
Yeah, why don't you tell me who you think ought to be in the Pop Filter Hall of Fame?
All right, I'm going to steal Mike's build-up. He was like, there's one person who's always been there for all of us. We, the three of us, like to think of ourselves as men about town, handsome, yeah, suit wearers.
Gentlemen.
We're the Tom Ellis. He's from Lucifer.
Lucifer.
You guys seen Lucifer?
I have.
The Danny Ocean, played by George Clooney. That's sort of how we look and act. But I think that there is one fictional character that I can put right in the middle of Dr. Jimothy's Venn diagram and sum all three of us up. He is the most important fictional character to the all three of us. And I would like...
Who's not already... in the Hall of Fame.
To put Nicholas Miller in the Hall of Fame.
Wow. So New Girl's own.
Yes.
Nick Miller.
This is a fictional character.
Yeah.
Played by Jake Johnson.
I didn't do anything!
Okay.
I have to say, I think you are more of a Miller man. And
it's
I'm
Miller
a
time.
I'm you're a CC guy?
I'm a Winston woman.
Well, yeah,
so,
that's true.
Yeah, this girl...
And then I think we just heard by Mike's screaming that he's a Schmidt guy.
Yeah.
No, I am not!
Well, Mike is our real life Schmidt. So, honestly, what I'm saying there is I'm wondering if that's going to hurt you a little bit mm-hmm. because I'm projecting ahead to the future, and I'm thinking of Frank Sinatra, a.k.a. Brown Thunder, Winnie the Bish. Like, I want to make sure there's a spot open for him. And if he has to take it from Nick, Winston, my boy Winston, wouldn't want to do that. He
right,
would give
exactly.
himself up. But if
what
on his
would
behalf,
Winston do?
But on his behalf, I'll push Nick Miller right out.
The thing is, though, is that even though he might not be your guys' number one character, you still love him,
yeah.
and you love me.
Yeah.
And so it all is, of that love together, it's going to throw your hand in the air
it
and vote
nice
for him.
It is nice to watch that. What part of what I like about New Girl is it is a show about my two best friends hanging out with another group of people. So I guess I'm like a little. That's like some cuck action there. But and then I watch them hang out with these other people, and I'm like, oh yeah, because Ryan is my Nick Miller, and obviously Mike is my Schmittle Schmitz.
I'll take that insultment.
Hey, this is Greg. Welcome to Cuck Action.
So I have decided I'm going to reclaim the word cuck.
Oh yeah, for
I like
sure.
Because it 100% applies to me, except in the most extreme. Like, I don't want people to bang my wife. Please don't. If you're listening,
please
don't. Have sex with my
okay,
wife.
Okay, that's the cuckiest thing she's I've ever said. Please don't bang my wife.
Yeah, I guess so. She won't let you, but also don't. Okay, but we are doing this Hall of Fame. It's important.
No,
I can't get into my cuckdom.
It's hallowed.
Yeah, it's the hallowed halls, the august halls. Mine is the man of the hour, you guys.
Donald Trump.
President Donald Trump. Can you believe it? No, man of the hour, Chucky Coughs. Charlie Kaufman. He gave me Being John Malkovich, the movie that when I saw it, I said... There's no chance any movie will touch this. And it almost made it all the way for 99. Adaptation in the Middle, which one day we're going to talk about adaptation. That's a dope, complicated, crazy movie. And then this movie right here, Eternal Sunshine, which was better than I remembered. I think it's better than Being John Malkovich. I think already, even though some parts of it are problematic to me perhaps, I'm again saying this is it. Like, we are first seed all the way, no doubt.
This is the same thing that you said about The Mummy last season.
You're a huge Schenectady, New York man.
I have seen Schenectady, New York multiple times.
You played the soundtrack at your wedding.
I have seen it a
whole bunch. I do think, I've seen that movie. I like that movie, but I do think that there's a peak. Like, we're at the peak.
Yeah.
And that's a downfall. Now we're back into, like, Kaufman traps. But this is perfect.
Yeah. All right. Well, that is the three candidates. We will now vote on who is going to get in. So,
and Greg, let me ask you real quick. I can vote for all three?
You cannot vote for all three.
This is bullshit.
We each hold in our hands two voting stones. When I give you the command, you will put your voting stone forward if you vote for a candidate. All right. We begin now. as you put your voting stone down, because this is an audio medium, say if you are voting or not.
Don't do it as quietly as possible.
Don't just do it quietly, and then I go, okay, I get it. I see your vote. All right, so the first was Matt Groening, and I'm going to give the first vote, and I'm going to say yes to Matt Groening. Ryan, what is your vote? Put forth your voting stone.
It's no.
It's a no. Mike, will you save your vote, perhaps to get the other two in, or out of spite, will you spike this?
It's not out of spite. It's out of true emotion, and fuck Ryan. Yes.
Here's my thing real quick.
Yeah, this needs an explanation.
I believe that The Simpsons is the single thing that has ever, the single greatest thing that has ever happened to humanity. I think
it is definitely to us.
The pinnacle of pop culture. But Mike did not say The Simpsons. He said Matt Groening. And I think if you go back and watch the first season and a half, if you watch the Tracy Ullman episodes, if you read Life is Hell comics, I think that there was a writing staff that was brought in in between the second and third that made it the single greatest thing of all time. And David X. Cohen, who was a partner of his, made Futurama the iconic show that it is. What has been birthed from his head? It's sort of like talking about
Seinfeld to Larry David?
No, I think this is talking about, I love The Force Awakens, thank you, George Lucas.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't, I like.
You made up the names of all this stuff and kind of what they look like, but you didn't give it the life.
Made it amazing.
If we could only have one single entity in the Hall of Fame and it was The Simpsons, I'm in.
Yeah.
But I don't think I can give it to Matt Groening. Also, he's a terrible asshole.
All right, well.
Also, he has giant bug eyes and buck teeth. That's why they all look like
that. I thought he was bald and piratey.
I always find it weird when you see that he's in three dimensions.
Uh-huh.
Just doesn't look right. All right. Well, Mike, you're going to get a chance to slam this right back in Ryan's face.
But remember, I'm handsome.
But remember, he is ever so handsome. Ryan, who's your candidate again?
My candidate is, of course, one Nicholas Miller.
Julius Pepperwood himself.
So, Mike, I'm going to ask you to cast the first vote.
So the Hall of Fame is supposed to be like who has influenced us and made us who we are in various stages of who we are. And I should ignore any sort of emotion and just vote on that.
I wouldn't want you to let the points, which we're now tied to a piece. I wouldn't.
Although if I get Nick Miller in then.
Yeah. So this would be essentially you giving Ryan a point. But I would ask you, what is your honor worth?
I never want to play to the points.
Yeah.
That's my favorite question.
Always want to play to what is my honor worth.
What is,
And I say I'm somebody who wants to dress like Winston, wants to be as successful as Schmidt, and is a goddamn dirty loser like Nick Miller.
Woo!
And I got to, unfortunately, vote for the Nick Miller.
Ryan, are you going to back your own horse here and Nick Miller?
I wish there was stuff I could say right now, like if I had a podium and could give a speech, but I think Mike just nailed all of it. I am voting for Nick Miller.
Well, I don't really want to just save a spot for Winnie the Bish on the back of Nick Miller. Winston would hate that, so I will also vote for him. And Nick Miller, congratulations. Come on down. We'll get you fitted for a bust. We'll get that torso and head right off you and put you in the hall. All right, well, we're not done yet, though, you guys.
Right.
What about Greg, the host? What about his suggestion of Charlie Kaufman? I got to vote yes for my own, Ryan.
And I'm a yes.
And Ryan's a yes, Mike.
I would, but if I could, Greg.
But you can't because you used your two votes.
I thought I dropped a stone somewhere and I cannot find it.
I'm sorry, Ryan, was I not clear about how it worked?
It's crazy is that you were clear about the rules.
I was.
You were clear about your person, Charlie Kaufman, and clear that you were the host and give all the points.
Well,
so I don't understand what's going on. Mike, can I ask you a question real quick?
To the honor.
Yeah, he's so fucking honorable.
This is a little behind the curtain, but I do want to know. Do you think that Charlie Kaufman just ran into two juggernauts and he has a future in the Pop Filter Hall of Fame, or are you saying no forever?
I would have to do a deeper dive and soul search and be less drunk to remember what Charlie Kaufman has done. And
Bean John Malkovich got number 2 in 99.
We've named the 4 things I could name of his.
He's also written several episodes of The Golden Girls.
Oh, I'm in. Why? Ah, fuck my vote.
It's too late, man. It's too late. That's not how
it
works.
Yeah, I think he ran into juggernauts for me. He ran into personal Mike juggernauts.
And I think that even though we're talking about Eternal tonight and John Malkovich last season, we have not talked about my favorite movie of his.
And we won't forever, based
right,
on the probably arcane
not.
Rules we have.
Because that's the way it is. That's the way we made it, and that's the way it's going to stay. Well, congratulations, Nick Miller. You are now in
the one least likely.
Yeah, I would not have guessed that.
You are now in the Hall of Fame, and I think we're just going to the three of us are going to spend some time just looking at his display here.
His turtly ass face.
Yeah.
What's crazy, though, is that we opted out of the framed painting, and just a giant 30-foot statue of Nick Miller is now in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's pretty big. It's taken up a lot of the space. Mm-hmm, Yeah, but he takes up a lot of space in our hearts.
Right.
All right, well, we're going to take a little break here, and we come back, do some more chatting, you guys. Light and day
is more than gentlemen, let me ask you this. This is a movie about relationships. Is there a healthy relationship in this movie? And what is the film actually trying to say about love and relationships?
Okay. I don't think there is.
There's not, right? There's not a healthy relationship in this movie.
Could we say that it's it loves relationships, but is not in love with
the specific relationships?
Yeah, like not, and like there's a lot of destiny and fate in this movie. Like they keep meeting each other.
Yeah.
So that's a thing. But the fact that you will be with the same person forever, I don't think is in here. This is not like a Disney princess movie.
Doesn't it conceive of relationships as beautiful initially and then kind of waning out? And then even though that's painful, we have to Toy Story 2 still embrace that pain and enjoy the good beginning part of relationships, but it's definitely kind of doomed.
Wait, Greg, do you mean Toy Story 2 from the first season of Woody, 1999?
Yeah.
Good. Us callback. It's not cynical. There's hope, and I think Memantine. Thank you. I was trying to get there. Memantine does say it when they've tried to hide her in his humiliation for so long and just can't. She keeps getting shot away, and she says, "This is it. I'm gonna be gone soon." He says, "I know," and she says, "What do we do?" He goes, "Enjoy it."
Yeah.
And I think that's
the thesis of the movie.
If there
right?
is one, it's that, and it's. Everything will end either because it will get ruined or we will die. So we should stop fighting it and enjoy the time we have.
You mean characters in movies will die?
No, oh, buddy.
We will live forever. Yeah. Guys.
No, you guys.
What movies will we be reviewing in the year 3035?
Death is looming always.
Oh,
one
God.
Of us could die why do this?
Tonight. I think that makes life spicier.
Yeah, right?
I care about things more because it will not last
but
forever.
But isn't that line as the thesis of this movie, isn't that the exact same thesis as Toy Story 2?
I think so.
Maybe all of art and
all
poetry.
All good art is we will die, so let's party now.
But let's take time to look at the relationships in the movie.
Like Woody and
okay,
Buzz.
So there's Woody and Buzz, right? Now, I ship them because
yeah.
I just think that they are good for each other. And
so
they
you just want to tell Cowboy Girl to kick rocks?
Jesse yeah. and Peep can go kick rocks.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, they're together. Joan Cusack
oh,
has a
this
strong
sounds like some
energy.
Real snowflake agenda to me.
That, okay, well, I want the potato folks to stay together.
Yeah, the potatoes will always stay together.
Yeah, they're
both
best buds.
Both in Toy Story 2. And in Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Yeah, I hate to interrupt this Toy Story 2 conversation, but did you guys notice how many potato folks Clementine has on her mantle?
Yeah.
A lot.
Is that just a Toy
that
Story 2 reference?
A pretty understated part of the movie.
Is this movie telling us how much our relationships are because we don't craft enough with our significant others? Because the amount of potato-ness and then drawing they do together.
I thought the whole point of crafting was to get the fuck away from you.
I want to craft alone. Don't craft yeah. with me.
There's two scenes that I think I thought very differently of the first time I saw it, and now I can't, like, the most memorable, iconic scenes of this movie, and it's not about, like, cars falling or faceless people.
Mm-hmm.
It's the scene on the steps
yeah.
with Let's Enjoy It,
right.
and then the final lines of the movie of Clementine says, no, like, you're going to be boring, and I'm going to feel trapped, and we're just going to break up, and then Jim Carrey says, okay.
Right, and that's it, because you do, at a certain point, you're like, oh, Joel looks much freer. But it is just in his memories, and he's acknowledged that. Is he going to be that same free Joel in the real world? And that's showing he actually did arc, even though none of that happened in the real world.
Sure, but I think they're iconic. I thought that they were iconic because it proves that love exists.
Mm-hmm.
And now, watching it now, it proves that pain is important.
Yeah.
Like, that they're all going to go through this again. And that's what builds us. And deleting the memories is not worth it.
Right. Because I think it's so important to have that skeleton painting of a lost love and remember the good times. Because that's how if they truly deleted each other, they would only repeat those same mistakes with other people.
Right.
But by remembering why you're a piece of shit and the person you were with is a piece of shit, you can fucking grow.
And how long do we think that Joel and Clementine's relationship lasted in real time?
Like a year?
2 years.
Two years?
Yeah, 1 or 2 years. So
with the memories, now they have to go through it again. That's another 2 years. But then whoever they go out with after that It's going to be the greatest relationship. And what I thought the first time I watched it was, oh, they fixed everything and they'll be together forever. That's not what's going on.
One of the genius things in this movie is we don't meet the star of the rom-com, but the rom-com was Joel meeting Naomi. And then they were super happy. But then this is the start of another rom-com as Joel meets Clem. And then we see all the fucking train wrecks that they are together. But that's actually what's magical, because train wrecks can still make shit work.
Have you guys ever seen the Naomi scene?
No. Is that, like, edited out?
Uh-huh. There's a deleted scene of Naomi.
Where
it's
he
cheats
on her, right? Or cheats on
Clem. Well, he leaves Naomi to go to this beach party where he meets Clementine. And I don't know if they do anything that day. Because, no, he says he runs away from
the
beach.
He runs away, yeah.
So they don't do anything. But there's a scene where Naomi, and it's Ellen Pompeo from Ms. Grey's Anatomy.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Grey's Anatomy. And she's just sitting at a table doing work. And he's like, okay, I'm leaving. Bye. And I do like the idea of not including Naomi. Like, just making her a mystery in our brain.
She's always been a real, like, Rosalind from Romeo and Juliet.
Right, exactly.
Thing.
Yeah.
Right.
It's this other person that you hear a lot about and seems very important to the character, but you never get to meet and so isn't part of your understanding.
And what I love in building the Joel is when we don't know the mind fuck that is happening yet, is Joel's like, oh, maybe I should call Naomi. She was nice.
She was nice.
So his reason for being somebody is the reason Clem hates being with somebody. And that is so telling in itself.
And they are perfect for each other of this phase of their life.
Right.
And then they're going to cocoon out into better people and move on.
But so that's Joel and Clem. We want to go through all the relationships. So
yeah, well, another
there?
One we mentioned earlier was Bob and Carrie.
Bob and Carrie are cross.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's the, you show somebody for 15 minutes because the beach them is great. And they're just like, who is that girl you're talking to? And they're very lovey with him and with each other. And then the shitty version is them throwing laundry at each other. But I think any long-term relationship is going to have shit. Because if you think you're never going to fight, fuck you.
That's
your child.
Is that this movie bounces back and forth between idealized romance and realism.
Yeah.
And when you look at David Cross and Jane,
I'm making a birdhouse.
The way that they act with each other, it seems terrible. But also, we've been in relationships long enough where we know that there are moments like that, and you can't be running on the beach at all times. Oh. So are we supposed to look at that relationship and say, oh, God, we want Joel and Clementine to be together, but if they are together, they become that? Is that like the worst possible situation?
I guess rather than maybe go through the relationships one by one in this way, it's not that any one relationship is so bad. It's that
none are good.
What's the really good relationship? Like, what version of a happy couple do we see in this movie? Because it kind of seems like the movie has a very fatalistic take on love. You will fall into love and you will fall out of love. And they're both equally important experiences, but you will fall out of love. Like,
the doctor cheats on his wife with Kirsten Dunst. Mark Ruffalo wants to be with Kirsten Dunst, doesn't realize she's deeply in love with the doctor. Patrick is just mimicking everything Joel did.
It's like basically a sociopath.
He's definitely the worst fucking person in a cast of terrible people.
I think Mark Ruffalo does realize that Kirsten Dunst is loving the doctor. He thinks that since the brain wipe, I'm going to push through this part.
No, no, he didn't know. I do buy him at
the end, honestly,
he says, I didn't know.
In that scene, I thought he was lying to himself.
Yeah, he works for the company.
I thought that was legit.
Well, I think when he says it, he means it. They're talking about, Kirsten Dunst at the end of the movie says to him, you never knew that I was with Howard, with Dr. Meskovitz or whatever his name is. And he says, oh, well, I saw like one time you were getting out of his car and I suspected. To me, that read as I knew and I was doing the same thing that Patrick Baby is doing, but I'm lying to myself about it.
Right.
Elijah Wood is being truthful with himself about it, I think. And
he's a piece of shit.
That he's a piece of shit.
Yeah,
but Mark Ruffalo,
digging through her memories to manipulate her.
I think Mark Ruffalo basically,
that changes. I thought Ruffalo and Dunst were the two purest people in this movie, even though they are not good on the job. They're fucking drinking and playing very good stoners.
But like, I think that Patrick is pulled away from Ruffalo and Joel as like clearly the evil guy, but I don't think that his actions are that far away from Ruffalo and Joel.
No, I think he actually makes a pretty good foil for them. They're all kind of playing that nice guy card, right?
Uh-huh. And it's just how much can you hide it? You know, like how much can I trick the girl into thinking that I'm altruistic as opposed to manipulative with a smile.
And maybe not trick the girl. How much maybe Joel and Ruffalo are better at tricking themselves. Mm-hmm. Patrick is opening a bag of somebody else's shit to do it. The other two aren't that blatant, but are doing it in smaller ways.
All right. Well, that's the relationship portion of the show.
I'm bummed out.
You're bummed out about what?
Life, love.
Life is painful, but it is beautiful.
It will end.
It is the point of all movies. And it will end, I think, mercifully. But this segment has ended, perhaps not mercifully. And now we're going to go into some just like straight Patreon content. So if the next thing you hear is us talking about Patreon, then you did a good job. And if the next thing you hear is us saying like, oh, guys, you just missed such a good
bit.
We
were so good in that Patreon part.
Yeah, then you know that you got to sign up for our sweet Patreon.
Patreon.com/yourpopfilter. We should let them know how to get there.
Yeah. Also, I don't understand why the two of you say Patrick the way you do, but Patreon the way... Shouldn't they be said in the similar fashion?
Patreon, baby boy.
Baby boy.
It's pretty difficult. Oh, well, we will be right back.
My darling Clementine, no art lost and gone forever.
Well, you know what the sirens and the screaming means. We have gotten to the speed round. It is time to give each of these topics about a minute. All right, topic number one. How important is Clementine's hair to our understanding of the movie?
This is film analysis for children, I think.
Uh-huh.
You know, I hate using that term. We talked about this in 99, but like, if you're struggling with really digging into Eternal Sunshine, watch the hair. Come up with things.
Yeah.
Colors mean stuff.
This is, I think, colors mean stuff, and it lets you know where in time we are,
yeah.
That the beginning is the end. In a lot of ways, I think this is Baby's first smart movie, and that is not dry. I think this is a fucking great movie, but there's nothing that if somebody says you go, oh shit, I didn't think about that. If you watch this movie twice, you're like, yeah, for sure, but it's fucking great.
I think that it stands the test of time because it has both, as opposed to Shawshank, which only has the first one.
Uh-huh.
But the most important hair, I think, the one that like kills it, is the fading blue at the very beginning.
Yeah, right, because it makes her look so awful. And so you've seen her look amazing. There's towards the middle of the movie, there's like the perfect hair where you see her like on the day she did it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like the most beautiful she looks. And then you see her, and you see what it looks like when it washes out, because
honestly,
that's
like
what happens to love in the movie.
Oh my god!
But my god,
think about that. But that's like
Greg. Give yourself a point.
Color, it fades like that.
The hair, like the hair that I will never forget, and the dress I'll never forget, is in Jim Carrey's kitchen.
Oh, uh-huh.
That hair,
Mrs.
That's absolutely
Mrs.
true.
Mrs. Hamlin.
Point goes to Ryan.
Oh my goodness, Mrs. Hamlin, please come back.
The Lacuna workers lack professionalism and respect for their clients. Why do you think this is, and what does it mean?
That's anything. You stop thinking about the emotionality of the people you're dealing with, and this is your day job. I bet day
one. Jump on the bed. He's lying on. They drink his scotch.
So you think that this is like doctors joke about failed surgery taken up a notch?
Yeah, it's one. It's
otherwise
it's
you kill yourself.
Gallows humor, because these you're only surrounded. No, you're never going to deal with a happy patient, Lacuna.
Yeah,
and it's they are 20 somethings, and this is how you treat any job. Eventually, you forget why you got into the memory erasing business, and it's just a fucking check.
I think a different movie would have had Lacuna as this is like the 49th franchise and very cold people come in.
Yeah, for sure.
But the way that they act is another sign that this should not be real.
Uh-huh.
This should not ever exist.
Because people will fuck with it.
Mark Ruffalo thinks he cleaned up, and then when the doctor's around, finds a beard behind Jim Carrey's head.
They barely get it.
She trips fully on a person's body.
Yeah.
And then his eyes open. They go, let's put more drugs in him. Like, nobody knows what
happening. They hump right next to her.
It's also the power of medicine, though. Like, if you have the point to do that to somebody's life,
uh-huh.
You do take off your clothes and dance around. Like, that is so much power.
I've done that when you pass out.
I know
you have.
The
first thing I do is drop trow.
And it
just fucking do the twist.
It did make the movie a lot better. That one goes to Ryan. All right. This movie sort of has a twist in that the beginning of it actually takes place chronologically very near the end of the story. Do you think knowing that twist either made the movie better or worse upon this viewing? And did you remember it at all?
I didn't remember. I was confused. I thought maybe I knew more before, but then I figured it out this time, or I knew less before. But the thing that sold it all was the final shot.
Where it was doing it just over again? Or what's the final shot?
They were running down the beach. So we talked about, like, one of my favorite scenes in history is Jim Carrey's okay, Kate Winslet's okay,
uh-huh.
We're going to do this again. But then they run down the beach again, and it's exactly the same as the first scene, but then there's jump cuts,
uh-huh.
And when it jump cuts, it does not move them forward, it moves them backwards.
Uh-huh.
And we get to watch the entire movie just in the last 10 seconds. We're going to go back a little bit. We're going to do it again. Yeah. We're going to go back a little bit, and we're going to do it again.
They spend so much time on the worst beach in the fucking world. Montauk sucks. It looks atrocious always.
I always thought Montauk was one of those things like Jackson Hole or Aspen, where like,
but it's either too windy or too snowy. It looks like garbage for garbage people.
All right, Ryan, your analysis of that thing.
I wanted to actually talk about the question.
It's too late, Mike.
Ryan did, and he got a point for it.
Well, he didn't shut the fuck up.
Would you? That's the key to winning.
So, Mike, you take this one. Would you tell a friend if they'd had their memory zapped?
Oh, for sure. Instantly.
Yeah. But
David Cross, she's like, don't do it. Of course fucking do it. That's insane. 2 years of your life, I'm going to let you forget that? Greg, I would never do that to you.
Even if
Ryan, I would never do that.
Even if I chose to have it done, I said I wanted to forget that time I said that American Pie was the best movie I'd ever
seen.
Yeah,
because you're never
four stars, Greg.
You're never going to grow as a person unless you remember that shitty thing you did.
But I love their interplay, that couple.
Yeah.
Which really gets so little screen time, but it's so, like, it's so, they're so present of her saying, what are you doing? You can't do this. Shitty. No, I'm definitely going to do this without a doubt. Shitty. Like,
transposing to real life, because this is a sci-fi thing, is you all know a friend's girlfriend cheated on them. And some people are like, don't tell him ever. And other people are like, I have to tell him. And both have moral reasons. They are correct. Tell the person their fucked up situation they're in.
Can I be honest?
Diane?
Case by case.
Case by case,
yeah,
right?
Like, I've got friends where I would not tell them. The whole idea for the movie was based on that philosophical question.
Right.
Would you tell people if you got that?
You get a card that says someone has been erased from your memory.
He can't remember a huge, like, how many people are in their lives that now have to lie to this person their entire life? Fuck that shit. That's so much morally worse than telling the person.
Unfortunately, the correct answer is case by case, so Ryan gets the point there.
Bullshit.
All right. What's Elijah Wood's character doing in this movie? Is it just an opportunity to have another Elijah?
Wait.
The monkey Elijah.
I thought you meant the Bible.
I didn't.
What is he, like, what is his job at Lacuna? Or what's the question?
What's he doing for us in this movie?
I think it is showing.
What's he showing the audience?
Because I think at first glance, people think they're Joel. And maybe if you're not rewatching it or if you're young, you don't realize Joel is shitty. So it's saying, here's the worst version of the nice guy.
Yeah, maybe like it will lead you there. Like if you agree that baby Patrick is shitty, then you also don't like Joel. Yeah.
Unfortunately, and I would hate if the movie did this, but that message isn't clear enough to the Joels of the world that you are essentially Patrick. But yet, I saw it. I remember thinking like, oh, that's Hollywood twist or whatever. And they do a thing where Joel goes in the library and Elijah Wood's face is kind of hidden.
Yeah.
But we could sort of.
That was such a weird shot.
What secret is this?
Yeah. I think it
is. Oh, God. And then his upside down eyes later.
A lot of the hints, the first hints of what's happening is coming through Patrick. And it's showing. And showing how the employees don't respect their patients. I think that that character of Patrick's doing a lot of lifting of numerous parts of the movie.
And the rom com trope, the movie trope in general, is foil. Like, I bet that they reread the script and said that Joel and Clementine are too three-dimensional. They're too much of their own characters. Let's get a Patrick in there.
Let's get some foils up in here. All right, that point goes to Mike.
Woo!
All right.
That's bullshit.
This movie is absolutely lousy with water imagery. What are we doing with that water imagery?
Shit's fluid, bitch. Time, love, everything. Fluid.
I think that there's too much water to just say rebirth, right?
And there is one very clear rebirth moment. So I don't think they can all be rebirth.
But what's the clear rebirth moment? Spell it out for the listeners and not.
When it's actually, when it's literally pouring rain and he's like under the table.
Oh, yeah.
And she puts the book on her head and then he has to leave the
room. Yeah. And then they are joined from that moment forward.
So not when he's getting watched in the sink and goes, it's so seething.
And I sort of think that you only get one. You only get one rebirth water scene per movie.
Uh-huh.
But then we also have a house completely wrecked by water and wet weather.
Yeah.
And then it's the kitchen sink scene where they're flushed down a thing. I don't know.
Even Lake Charles is the frozen water.
It's frozen, and he's worried it's cracking.
Right.
It snows all the time.
I think that it's like the only thing stronger than love. Like, it's the thing that can sneak in to every corner, even though you don't think it will, other than love.
What I like is, so, when we talk about life, you have the one relationship that changes you, and then you can actually have the real relationship in your life. But I think life is just a series of rebirths, and you're always growing and changing if you're doing it right. And this movie's just like, nope, washed away again. Washed away again.
Yeah, if I filled this room with ninjas, we would all die, but they wouldn't leave the room. If I filled this room with water, it would get out.
They'd leave. I mean, if they got hungry.
To try to stop water from permeating is like trying to stop love or memories from permeating. Like, it's the most love-like thing.
Ooh, oh, man, this one's hard. I'm going to give it to Ryan.
You can give it to both.
I'll give it to you both. That's a good idea. I'm going to give it to you both. You both said a lot of really good things. By the way, lacuna, what it means, like a small depression that something can flow into, and that's exactly like what
water does.
We're just saying, yeah.
If you give water a chance to flow into something, it's going to do
it. Loves
it's
it.
Gonna
it.
Do
water's
it every
all
time.
It wants to do.
Waters be flowing.
All right, there are quotes from Alexander Pope and Nietzsche in this. Essentially, they both boil down to ignorance is bliss. What does this movie say about the concept of ignorance being bliss?
Fuck Pope and Nietzsche.
Yeah,
this movie says know your shit.
I've never seen a movie that will use philosophers or poets. What was Pope? Was he a Pope?
A poet, yeah.
Pope.
Okay. Philosophers and poets and say, I'm going to use your quote, and then fucking give you the biggest middle finger of all time.
Because it's, so ignorance may be bliss, but ignorance is stasis.
Yeah.
And I think this movie is all about not being static and growing.
And the person to watch for this is Kirsten Dunst, who for a long time is too young, like too immature. And she's the one with all the quotes.
Because she's fucking lost the most important memory that she has, the most foundational memory.
The biggest thing that's ever happened to her. It makes her so crazy that she says Pope Alexander instead of Alexander Pope. But then we watch her learn. Those quotes are bullshit. Bartlett's is bullshit. It's time to start thinking for her own and keeping her own memory.
Yeah, and mailing that shit to every client.
You can't live.
Remember your dog, lady.
Also, Alexander Pope was a sarcastic motherfucker. I think he was being ironic with that quote. I'm not being ironic when I say that point goes to Ryan.
And taking out of context, you could not realize somebody's sarcastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Like Bartlett's just has his one little thing, and she's like, right?
Yeah, but like if you read that, like the rape of the lock, like he's being such a sarcastic fuck throughout that whole thing. So it's hard to imagine that he wasn't in that instance. All right, our very last issue, you guys. This movie talks about sort of the divide between kid life and adult life. At one point, Kirsten Dunst says that like to be a kid is wonderful and magical. But does the movie take that opinion that childhood is that way?
The movie reminds you that sometimes you had to fucking hammer a pigeon because bullies were being bullies.
And then I like when he turns around and he's like, you know what? I'm going to go fucking straighten this kid out. And the kid immediately takes him down.
There's another thing that happens in all of those memories, though, that, again, confuses me about the movie's philosophy on relationships, which is once Kate Winslet kicks in the door, Clementine kicks in the door to his memories, she makes all the decisions.
Right, so here, but that is, the doctor says that at one point, she is him. The reason, so Joel.
She needs Clem.
Joel knows he's Clem. A nice spineless guy, right? So why Mementine does everything is because Joel doesn't see Joel as a doer. He sees Clem as a doer. So even though Mementine is Joel, she has to be the one to make the decisions because he doesn't think he can.
So do you think that if we watched Spotless Sunshine of the Eternal Mind, then we would have seen Joel saying, hey, Clem, you don't need to go that crazy. You don't need to react like that. Like pulling her back into the middle.
Yeah, I think it would be time she went to the edge and he went, no. What if we just sit on this couch? And she'd be like, oh, thank you for telling me that. I should do that more often.
But it's not that it doesn't say that the relationship is perfect and will last forever. That says that the relationship was perfect for their lives at that time.
For sure.
And it's important to remember everything and move on.
Well, Mike takes that point. And that makes the final score, Ryan 8, Mike 7.
Holy shit.
Ryan continues his streak of domination. Well, that's all the talking points we have. But guys, before we head off into the night to go run around and be free, let me ask you, how do you think this movie's going to do going forward?
Here's our only hope, listeners, is that none of the three of us decided that Eyes Wide Shut was our number one choice of last year. But it won because we all loved it the most collectively.
Yeah.
That Mr. Venn diagram.
Mr. Jimothy Venn diagram decided that Eyes Wide Shut
won. That's why he's in the Pop Filter Hall of Fame.
Our only hope, because this was a magical masterpiece.
I don't have real critiques about this movie.
Is that it's all of our number three? Because, yeah, if we all
there's
have different
no
number
chance.
Ones.
I mean, there's just no chance that we're all going to rate it as low as three. It, you know, I'll tell you one thing, though, and you guys can go check out the bracket at challenge.com/Modi2004. It's first round or its next round matchup is brutal. It has Before Sunset as is. That is a real dark horse here. So that's one thing. And we're going to watch Before Sunset later, which we're smart guys. So we don't have recency bias. But that's going to be the last movie that we watch. And it's going against this movie.
No, it's next week.
Oh, is it? We're watching it next week.
I don't know when any movie's coming up. And there's more movies I haven't seen this year than last year.
It's important to note, though, that Charlie Kaufman is not in the Pop Filter Hall of Fame.
He's not. No, he didn't make it.
Spider-Man is. And Spider-Man is in this bracket. So
And also, one of our all-time favorite movies as a group, Mean Girls. So it
we all could do it without the sound.
Oh, yeah. That week when we do Mean Girls, we're not analyzing. We are reciting without scripts.
All going to just be doing all our favorite lines. Well, I think it's got a pretty good chance. I do think it's hard to go first. We get very excited about the first movies, but then we watch other stuff and we decide that we're too good for the number one seed. But we are all going to have to like two movies better.
I know.
I don't know, man. I don't know. Well, we will see when you tune in next week. We're going to be doing Before Sunset. That's potentially a giant killer. I have not seen it, but I've only heard absolutely amazing things about it. So that's just sort of my guess is that that is a movie that could be difficult. All right, so Ryan was the winner. Before we go, I want to tell you about a couple things that you should definitely know about. If you're going to the internet and you're like, man, there's just no websites on this thing, try going to yourpopfilter.com. That's our website, and it's got everything you need from us. If you throw a /Amazon on that, you can do all your normal shopping, but then we get a little bit of money, and it feels pretty good to us. If you go to youtube.com and search for Your Pop Filter, you get to see some of the cool videos that we've put up. It's little bits from our show with some very inviting pictures that will make you think of what we said in a new light. And I think that's important. Social media, we have twitter.com is at Your Pop Filter. And then facebook.com, we are, just type in Your Pop Filter on Facebook, right? You'll find us. Our music was by Shady Monk.
Yeah, it was.
Catch us on our Patreon. And if you want to contact us, and it absolutely has to be through email, try contacts@yourpopfilter.com. But if you're like, you know what, I want to do an email, but with my mouth into somebody's ear, then call 1-562 Dr. DJ Pop. He's a robot. He's our friend. He'll take your message, and if he likes it, he'll pass it on to us. So as
one Ryan, of his hands is gave you cookie.
And his other hand is a cookie.
All right. Well, for movie of the year, I am Greg. These guys are Mike and Ryan. And we'll see you next week.